with Dr. Osborne today. Please give a visual example of the proper way to do the deadlift. I'm not going to make you do a visual because
I don't know if you can see me do a deadlift in here or not.
Here's what we could do a visual of is you playing the guitar, but that's not why people are here. People aren't here to watch you play the guitar.
If they heard me play my new song, I've been working on Blackbird, which is most guitarists know that's not an easy acoustic Beatles tune to play, but I think I have fairly mastered it right now. So if there's any takers, maybe one day I'll play Blackbird on live on television.
Well, before we get to Blackbird, let's get to this question. Let's do an audio description of a way you would describe a proper deadlift.
I agree, it'd be better to visualize it, but I can't do it right in the small space. You know, there's two ways to do it: with a straight bar, Olympic bar, or you can use a trap bar or hexagonal bar, which I use at my house. I do them both ways. And one thing, you maybe ought to come to our deadlift, our free deadlift thing this week. Is that this week, Ben, in Johnson City?
It is not this week.
No, it isn't. Stay tuned for when it's going to be.
Stay tuned for that one.
I think Zach is going to come in and do a free deadlift clinic in my Johnson City office because this is important. The form is very important. One thing, a couple of tips I'll try to guide you through. One is, just make sure that your head is facing straight ahead, not too far up, not too far down. You're not going to get into a full squat like you would a squat. In a deadlift, you don't get, usually don't get your butt to your heels. So you're going to have your knees bent forward, shoulder width. The most important thing is your arms are going to remain straight and your back is not going to be rounded. The thing you need to worry about is rounding your back when you do a deadlift. And that's asking for back problems. But like Dr. Osborne said, if you have a bad back, people say, I can't deadlift, I have a bad back. Well, the reason you have a bad back is you don't deadlift. So, you know, it's probably the number one exercise you can do, I would think. That and the squat, they're about one and two. But, you know, you can certainly, I enjoyed looking at Dr. Osborne's book. He has some form and he has some visuals of it in the book, but go to our deadlift seminar that's free and learn how to deadlift. I don't care if you're 90 years old or 16, you need to learn how to deadlift because it hits every muscle in your body, even your biceps, believe it or not.
There's Dr. Osborne right there.
We're built kind of similarly. That's what I like. You know, our abs. He has an 8-pack. I've got a 6-pack.
Can't tell you two apart.
It's hard to tell us apart. But
you know. And I'll put this up from Roel. Thank you, Roel, for putting let's see here, Mind Pump YouTube. So Roel is saying starting strength or Mind Pump YouTube has some great content. Thank you for that. Also suggesting starting with a kettlebell. Great questions. We're going to talk more and more. Like Doc said, we'll hopefully have a date here soon for a free deadlift clinic with the TriStar Strength and Rehab guys over in Johnson City for those local. We're going to keep going here because we've got a ton of questions. Next question is, would appreciate some advice for treating a brown recluse spider bite. Other than cleaning with alcohol and applying antibacterial ointment, is there anything else I should be doing? Would methylene blue or extra vitamin C help? What's your thoughts on this?
It's not going to hurt to take methylene blue and vitamin C. It may provide some oxygenation to the tissues with the methylene blue. And vitamin C is always a healer, especially of skin. But, you know, I'd rather be bit by a brown recluse, I think, than some of the other spiders, like a black widow. And usually with a brown recluse, which is by far the most common type of spider bite around here that's going to cause problems, it's local. Now, I rarely see it causing systemic problems, but it certainly can get infected. So what you've done is the appropriate thing. and you need to keep an eye on it. I'd certainly keep some antibiotic ointment on it. I would cover it up if it's, you know, someplace that, like your foot or something that's going to be exposed to things. And just watch out for, a lot of times it just kind of creates an ulceration in your skin and can actually go pretty deep. So I would dress it. I wouldn't overly scrub it or anything. You know, I always like the infrared sauna. I like red light therapy for that type of thing. Just watch it. You may need, if it gets infected, you may need some oral antibiotics as well. We used to, you know, I've gone a few times in there when they wouldn't heal and shoot steroid shot underneath the spider bite. And sometimes that will help. You can also use some leprosy type medicines. I don't remember what they are, but it's not going to come to that. But keep a close eye on it so it doesn't, the infection doesn't get out of hand, is my main advice. But certainly you can use MB and vitamin C as possibilities to help it as well.
All right. Thank you for that question. We're speaking of red light therapy. I have heard / read varying opinions on which red light therapy is best to use to help with thinning hair. Some say low-level laser and some say LED. What would you think?
For hair, I would say low-level laser. Okay. I've seen it work. Ask Andy.
Yeah, you know,
he's got hair.
So we're going to say low-level laser there. I'm going to go to a CT calcium score, which I find super interesting. Have we done those, the CT calcium scores? I think I got a couple of questions in the Kingsport office. Have we done that yet?
As far as the dates
for when they're in.
Oh, no, you can get a CT calcium score anytime. You're talking about the carotid IMT, which is different.
I'm talking about carotid.
Which is coming up a little later this month.
But, okay.
The folks from Atlanta come up and do those in our office in Kingsport. But a CAT scan of your heart and lungs is what a CT calcium score is. And it looks looks at your coronary arteries to see if they have calcium deposits in it. Also scans your lungs, which is great. But, yeah, I mean, you can. You know, a lot of people say every 10 years, like you just printed up there. But, you know, certainly you could do it every 5 years if you want. It's really low-level radiation. And certainly if you're at risk, you can do it. 10 years ago, mine was zero, and now it's 92. So definitely getting some atherosclerosis. Even if you have a zero, you still have some atherosclerosis going on. That process starts when you're very young. You know, some endothelial changes. But that's why it's a good idea to get a carotid IMT, which is a little bit really more accurate for endothelial dysfunction. It looks at soft plaque as well as hard plaque. CT calcium measures hard plaque. And it's a good correlation, you know, to soft plaque, but it's not, you're not actually visualizing soft plaque like you are on a carotid IMT, or measuring the thickness of that intima, which is the innermost lining of the artery. So, but yeah, you can go ahead and get it. It'd be interesting to see, because you might want to, if you're progressing, you might want to take some steps in trying to reverse it. So a lot of times when I do a Cleveland Heart panel, I'll get a concomitant CT calcium scoring to really, if I'm worried, like if I want to make a decision on whether or not to use a low-level statin on somebody that really has a lot of risk factors, you know, sometimes a CT calcium score will make up my mind. So
it sounds like they had a CT calcium 6 years ago, and they're wanting to get it going again just because they're kind of getting to that age where things start
to
change.
I'm fine with it. Okay. I'm fine with it.
All right. Thank you so much for that question. Came through email. We're going to go to two Saul Palmetto questions here, and I'll ask them one after the other. Could you take too much Saul Palmetto? I just realized there is some of it in two of my supplements. How much do you recommend to help with lowering DHT?
You know, I think the usual dose of Saul Palmetto is somewhere around 320 to 900 and something. So, you know, definitely 900 is not too much. you know, you're not going to, you're going to have a hard time overdoing it on saw palmetto. You know, it's a very mild DHT blocker, dihydrotestosterone. And the reason you want to block it down if you have too much DHT is because you can see hair loss or prostate enlargement with high levels of DHT. So, you know, if you're getting 900 or a little more, I wouldn't worry about it. It's not going to work overnight. It's going to take 2 or 3 months before you may notice anything different. If you're looking to make it different, like checking a blood level or seeing hair or prostate benefits from that, you know, beta testosterone is something that should be in your with your saw palmetto as well. It may be better than saw palmetto. Usually you'll get a prostate formula that has a lot of different things in it, like pumpkin seed, nettle root, beta testosterone, lycopene, as well as saw palmetto, although that's the one people think about the most.
All right, let's go to this doesn't necessarily, I thought it was a saw palmetto question, but it's more of a DHT question. How long after taking natural options like saw palmetto, nettle, curcumin to try to lower DHT should I wait to test again? So this kind of
long thing. That's another thing I didn't mention was curcumin, turmeric. It will also help lower DHT. But, you know, DHT is just the more potent form of testosterone. So you don't want to lower it too much, you know, because it'll, like, finasteride is the prescription drug we use to lower that. But if you lower it too much, it will just kill your sex drive. So you don't want to lower it too much because, again, it is the most potent testosterone. But I would, you know, if you, 3 months, wait at least 3 months before you test again, maybe even 6, because it's not going to work overnight.
All right. Thank you for that question. I see Evangeline's here. Thank you so much, Evangeline, for hanging out with us. I see Barbara, WC1A, great question. Linda, what's up? Motaz is in the building. Motaz, what's up?
Hey, Mo.
All right, let's keep moving here, guys. Y'all know the drill. If you have a question for Doc, go ahead and put in the comments. We're going to get to the comments real soon. This is a testosterone question. 61-year-old husband tested twice, had T of 289 and then 192. So the first was 289, second 192, free T of 40.3, and then the second time was 31.1 of free T. Traditional doctor says no to TRT, as if you were to get prostate cancer, it could make it spread faster. What are your thoughts on this? Please explain. I'm looking forward to your explanation on this one.
Yeah, that's a totally wrong. Your traditional doctor doesn't know what he's talking about. Now, those are very low levels of testosterone. He needs to replace his testosterone. You're way more likely to get testosterone or prostate cancer with a low testosterone level than a high testosterone level. Again, testosterone does not cause prostate cancer. Take a copy of the book, Testosterone for Life by Dr. Abraham Morgenthaler, chief of urology at Harvard, who wrote the book on it. He comes to a lot of our meetings, and he'll explain why, you know, back 40, 50 years ago, they thought that. But it does not make, even if you had prostate cancer, it doesn't make it spread either. You know, that was well firmed up by a meeting at the American Urologic Society in San Francisco a few years ago. But read that book, put him on testosterone, go to somebody who knows what they're doing as far as hormone replacement. You know, because that's just way, way archaic thinking. And it's not going to cause it. It's not going to cause it to spread faster. Total BS. So read the book and put your husband on some tea. It'll be much happier, healthier. Everything will be better.
All right.
But you need to follow certain things, like, is it aromatizing to estrogen? Really, estrogen for a man is more likely to cause prostate problems by far than testosterone. And sometimes I see a 60-some-year-old guy, his estrogen level's higher than his wife's is, you know. So, and we watch, you know, testosterone can pop your hematocrit up a little bit, your red blood cell count too. That's about 5% of my patients. I treat thousands of them. And, you know, it's very minimal of them. They donate some blood and it's fine. That's just totally erroneous thinking there. There's so many benefits by it. I mean, look at who gets prostate cancer, old men with low T. You don't see these younger guys with testosterone out the roof getting prostate cancer. So, but read the book and give a copy to your doctor.
Thank you for that question. I mean, we get similar questions all the time, and we're going to keep answering them because it's important to get this sort of education out there. A lot of it's, you know, how to talk to your doctor about it, your primary care physician. So thank you for putting that in there. Okay, let's keep moving here. First, I see Kathy's here. Kathy, hello. Ray, what's going on? I see you on YouTube. The next question is, do we want our AST and ALT to be near the upper end of range or lower? I'll be honest, Doc, I don't know what AST or ALT are. So could you help me
those
with
are,
that?
Those are liver function tests, transaminases, and they're just a function of really how your liver works. It's a little different than looking at a bilirubin. But really, as long as it's in the normal range, it's not a worry. You don't want it to be too high. I'd rather be on the low end than the high end. But, you know, things that can cause it to go out the roof, of course, are hepatitis, liver injury, fatty liver, alcoholic liver, certain drugs like Tylenol could cause it. But yeah, so I'd rather be low normal than high normal probably, but as long as it was normal and I didn't drink too much alcohol or wasn't obese, then I wouldn't worry much at all about it. I did see a guy today with a high bilirubin level, and that was interesting because I was going over his Cleveland and his bilirubin was high. So I started looking back through his chart, and it's been high in the past. He has something called Gilbert syndrome, which absolutely means nothing. As a matter of fact, it has some protective benefits as well. You just need to know it, that there's nothing wrong with it. You know, bilirubin can also go up if you have your bile duct that's clogged or gallstones or that type of thing, or your jaundice. That's when that goes up. But for somebody normal that feels great that has a bilirubin high, it's Gilbert's, which is a normal variant, really. It was interesting because when I was talking to him, he says, yeah, this thing's been elevated since I was a kid. He says, as a matter of fact, your dad diagnosed it. So my dad was the original one that diagnosed Gilbert's. He sent him to, because dad noticed it was high when he came in for something else, mono or something, which can raise your other transaminases. So he diagnosed it and actually sent him to a liver expert, and Dad learned a lot about Gilbert syndrome through this patient I saw today. So it was a very interesting visit.
Super interesting.
Anyway. But that's just an aside. I don't know how I got off on that, but
no, it's a great explanation. Thank you for this question. So the answer is
I'd rather be lower than higher. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for that question there. This is a cool question on prolotherapy. What are your thoughts on the use of prolotherapy? It's not FDA approved. Studies have found no scientifically provable benefits. Would you consider taking it yourself or prescribing it for others? I love talking about things like, would you consider it for yourself? And we've talked a lot about things like that. So what's your thoughts on prolotherapy?
I would consider it, but there's better therapies, I think, like PRP. Basically, with prolotherapy, you're injecting a sugar solution into a joint or tendon that will attract, it's an irritant to the joint or tendon or ligament. So it brings out a blood response like platelets. And, you know, platelets have certain growth factors in them that aid in healing. And the prolotherapy is cheaper because it's just a cheap sugar solution. It's still not cheap, but I like PRP, platelet-rich plasma, better, which I've had. Prolotherapy is pretty irritating too. It's pretty painful from what I've heard. Some of my friends have had it done before they knew about the benefits of PRP. So it's not a painless injection. And I think there's just PRP is better because they're your own platelets. So there's no danger of injecting a foreign substance in your body. And I found the injections I've had of PRP were not painful. The one in my thumb was a little smarts. But the ones in my knees, Jill injected me. I didn't even feel it, really. My shoulder was very minimal, too. So I've had four joints injected. Just incredible results from my knees. Just fabulous results on the knees. Very easy. And I didn't have any irritation afterwards. Like some of the old PRP, they would include the white blood cells, and they were very irritant. But I didn't have any of this with our new spinner that we use. So I would prefer, I'm not against prolotherapy, but with prolotherapy, I don't think the results are going to be as good. You're going to have more injections. PRP may be a little more expensive, but you don't have to have that many. With prolotherapy, you're going to have a series of them. So PRP, I'm on that bandwagon.
And real quick, because there is a follow-up, the question is, can diabetics do prolotherapy?
Yeah, you could. I mean, but it is a sugar solution, so you need to watch your sugar. That's another reason, maybe if you're a brittle diabetic, not to do it. But okay. But it is a sugar solution.
All right. Great question there on prolotherapy. I see Carter's in the building. She's in the comments on Facebook. Carter, thank you so much. Okay.
Carter's pumped up because, we got our new in-body machine up and working in our JC office today. We'll have our in-body machine for Knoxville set up by Friday as we move into our new office there. But it's already got some incredible numbers to it. It's just a great thing. It's just an amazing machine, expensive machine. But we really can follow our patients better as to, you know, their body fat percentages, their water weight, their retaining their muscle mass, their basic metabolic rate. I mean, their segmental muscle. It's just amazing. Andy had very strong legs. Apparently, he's already done his. I'm really pumped about getting my measurements done. And it's just a cool thing. And I will do a podcast on it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll
talk soon on the benefits of that. Write that down. Make sure I do a podcast on it. I'd heard about them before, but it was Dr. Osborne that kind of sealed the deal for me.
Yeah, that actually came up in the longevity or the muscle and longevity podcast episode about this InBody. I can, you know, feel your enthusiasm for it now. And I felt it, you know, weeks ago when we recorded with Dr. Osborne. I'm super pumped about it. I can't wait to compare my water weight to yours. I would imagine that my water weight's going to be a little higher than yours.
Probably your water weight will be higher. My muscle weight will be higher than yours. And my fat distribution will be less, probably. I'm guessing.
We need to get to these questions.
Because I don't drink beer.
Golf House, I see you. We'll get to that omega-3 question. I love that question on YouTube. All right, we got a question here. It came on email. I'm a 68-year-old female. Since COVID started, I've only had one mild cold about a year ago, tested negative for COVID for that. My husband tested positive for COVID yesterday. Goes on to say he's starting a round of Paxlovid today. I feel like I have very mild symptoms of a cold today. Should I get started on Paxlovid if I test positive? Goes on to say, or would it be better to see if my immune system takes care of this and I use this as an opportunity to build up my antibodies for an even stronger immune system? Great question here. I'm sure, you know, we are having I'm hearing about more COVID cases. So what's your thoughts on this?
There's a little pop in COVID cases right now that we've treated. Yeah. I'm a 68-year-old male. So we're the same generation for sure. Maybe we knew each other in grade school, who knows? There is a little pop in COVID, and certainly almost everybody's had COVID by now. If anybody hasn't had COVID, raise your hand right now. Hadn't had it. I don't see anybody that hasn't had it. So we're all going to get it. We've all had it. We're going to get it again, probably. And right now it's a very mild, I forget the name, the mutation they're calling it now, but you know, something stupid, but it's a lot less virulent. The cases I'm seeing are just colds. Now, I've had a couple get a flu-like, you know, illness from it, but way milder. It's not killing people. Of course, the flu could kill anybody if you had the right, you know, comorbidities with it. But if you're healthy, I wouldn't use Paxlovid. I don't like it. Here's the thing about Paxlovid. I prescribed it a few times to very at-risk people. But if you're anywhere near healthy, you know, and hopefully at 68 years old you are and don't have a lot of risk factors, I don't like Paxlovid. And here's the reason I don't like it. You get recurrence of it. You know, they can't give a high enough dose of that as an antiviral to kill it off. So most of the time I've used it, and when I've seen Joe Biden use it and Fauci, they all use it and it came back. They all got a recurrence of it. So I don't like it because it's not strong enough to kill it off. So you take it, for 5 days or so, and then it comes back in 2 weeks because it didn't kill it off. So I'm not a Paxlovid fan. Plus it tastes horrible. There's very few people I've seen that could even complete the regimen of it. So I don't like it for those reasons. You know, I'm not totally against it. If you're in a nursing home or severely debilitated, you're just totally fearful it's going to kill you, but it's not going to, unless you're one of those people that's really on the verge anyway. But so I don't like it. No, I wouldn't take it. If I was you and your husband's already started it, unfortunately. So hopefully he won't get a rebound, what they call it. I just don't like the drug.
And this
personally,
is-
I would get on the other stuff that, you know, go to some of the COVID protocols. So definitely start up when you're DC, take zinc. You know, of course, I use some other alternative treatments for it that work. So look at those.
And this is a good follow-up question from the same listener. This is, you know, obviously, you know, particular to, you know, this situation, but also just in general, when is it better to get on a drug versus letting my highly supplemented body take care of itself? I think most of us here are taking a lot of supplements. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather let your own body response. That's why I think the natural immunity is way better than that other kind of immunity, which didn't work. Did anybody think that kind of immunity worked? No, it didn't. Plain out, didn't work. It also did not prevent spread. So I'll tell you, when I got COVID the first time, I've had it twice. The first time, I felt flu-ish for sure for 24 hours. I got in my infrared sauna and my temperature was 102.5. So I went in my 140 degree sauna and wanted my body temperature to even go up higher to fight off the illness. Your body's got some incredible ways on its own to fight it off. You should have a good immune system. And surely if you're taking D and C and NAC and quercetin, I mean, there's some great ways to fight this. And certainly I prefer that. You're exactly right.
All right. Thank you for that question. You know, it's something that, you know, we'll probably always be talking about, to some degree. So thank you for putting that in there. Guys, that does it for the questions that came in throughout the week. Thank you so much for sending those in. And we're going to get to the live comments now. Welcome in, everybody. If you're coming in just now, this is the Performance Medicine Show. I'm here with Dr. Rogers. If you guys have a question for Dr. Rogers, go ahead and put it in the comments. I see Gator Hater for Life's got a great question. I can't wait to get to that. Jack is getting in the building. What's up? WC1A, hello, hello. Okay, we're going to keep going. And I'm going to look for my first question. I'm just going to put this up for Motaz because I know you'll love to see it. Thank you.
Oh, great. You, yeah. Yeah, that was a great, two great podcasts. We'll be doing a lot together. I think I may even go down to Palm Beach and hang out with him a little bit.
Barbara's living in Florida. Thank you, Barbara, for hanging out with us up here. Okay, let's get to a question here. I'm looking. Let's start with Lisa here. Thank you. Lisa always shares the broadcast. When you are fasting for diet reasons, is it hard on your other organs? And if so, what are some helpful tips to do while fasting? I'm a diabetic and lost 74 pounds on Mounjaro. Am I damaging my organs by fasting? And also, what do you know about BioX4? What's your thoughts on this?
I don't know anything about BioX4. I'll have to look that up. Take a note, Ben, because I don't know anything about it.
All right, writing that down.
But yeah, I like fasting because it's kind of really, it's a great way to burn fat. You know, humans weren't meant to graze all day. They were meant to feast or fast. That's just how we evolved through the millennial. But, and certainly if you're overweight or sick, I think fasting is not only biblical, you know, there's a lot of healthy things in the Bible. And one of them is about fasting. And it's not just to test yourself. It's actually healthy for you because it kind of puts your body in a temporary state of ketosis, meaning you're burning your own fat. It's way more efficient than burning carbs or protein. So I like that. You know, the one thing that's been proven to prolong human life is fasting. You know, there's no doubt about that. Congratulations on the Mounjaro. I love it. 74 pounds. You know, you're not at risk for fat. Now, if you go into a prolonged fast, yeah, your organs could shut down. So that's why I don't believe in these really long fasts. You know, I did a 3-day fast one time and it was tough. I think you start, you know, it's crazy. Your mind clears up at first, your mental capacity gets better, then you reach a point of diminishing returns and it gets worse. So I got a little foggy headed towards the end. So tips, you know, water is always good. Electrolytes are good. Seems like you may be wanting to do a 2 or 3 day fast. Just make sure you don't get dehydrated and your electrolytes off, because that could affect some things, you know, and diabetic, you know, it's not going to send you into a diabetic ketoacidosis. You know, that happens to type 1 diabetics, not type 2. And I assume you're a type 2 if you lost 74 pounds on Mounjaro. That's by definition type 2 diabetes. But no, you're not damaging by doing short fast. The prolonged diet is actually mimicking caloric fasting. So BioX may be the same type of thing. I don't know. We'll look it up. But anyway, I hope that helps you. No, you're not short fast. You're not going to damage your organs.
Thank you, Lisa. I hope that helps. Rachel from JC. What's going on, Rachel? Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. I'm going to put Motaz's comment up here. One of the best ways to start with deadlifting is to use dumbbells and increase the weights gradually till you need to jump into using a hex bar. Thank you, Motaz.
I think that's good.
a great tip there.
And practice it just with body weight.
Yep.
First, you know, just get the form down first. The main thing is stick your butt out and don't round your back.
Yep. Let's get to WC1A on YouTube. Just started taking creatine. Didn't notice it is a blend of pyruvate, monohydrate, and phosphate. Is that a good blend? I Googled, but couldn't find much on that blend. Should I trash it? I see Evangeline's got a really cool comment. I'm going to put that up here as well, but let's go ahead and...
I use creatine. I use the monohydrate. Mm-hmm. So I don't know I've never used the blend. So if anybody else knows much about it, let me know. It's not going to hurt you. Just make sure that you don't overload on it and you hydrate really well with it. So,
no, put this from Evangeline. Thank you, Evangeline, for putting this comment in here. He's saying that in pure, it's good. Monohydrate is the best, which is what you just said. So thank you for that comment, yeah, Evangeline.
Yeah. Great comment.
Let's get to Barbara. I'm sure some can relate here. What can I do? My hair is coming out. I know you have kind of some thoughts on this. How would you kind of advise Barbara here?
you know, of course, you probably need a DHT blocker like we talked about before. The best thing, I think, for thinning hair, number one, check your labs, make sure your thyroid's okay, your iron's okay, and your hormones are okay. In general, hair loves estrogen. It's not real fond of dihydrotestosterone, of course, but I like oral minoxidil. Mm-hmm. It works way better than Rogaine, which is topical minoxidil. I like, for women that aren't childbearing age, I like low-dose finasteride. You know, so I think that can help. And I'd probably use a shampoo that's good for hair. Biotin's the best vitamin for hair loss, probably. And, you know, once a week or twice a week, use a dandruff shampoo.
Yeah.
But check labs and let's see where. I'd probably check a DHT level on you.
Barbara, maybe thank you so much.
On some saw palmetto and some things. But zinc also helps hair. Zinc, which is due for immune system too, works pretty good for hair.
So you said saw palmetto as well? Saw palmetto is part of your...
Yeah, that's a DHT bra. Yeah, for sure. Curcumin helps.
All right, Barbara, I hope that helps. Jasmine, what's up? Our esthetician in Knoxville is on Facebook right now. Thank you, Jasmine, for being with us tonight. Let's see here. Where am I at? Gosh, tons of great questions. Let's go to Facebook, then I'll get back to YouTube. Chuck is asking, good evening. Good evening, Chuck. What are your thoughts on Repatha? And I hope I pronounced that right. My cardiologist mentioned me taking a statin, and I declined, so she prescribed this. The insurance company finally approved it, but it's still sort of expensive. Did I pronounce that right? Repatha?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's one of the newer types of cholesterol medicine that's really not a statin. I think it's an injectable, if I'm mistaken. I've never prescribed it, but I know it works. It'll really lower cholesterol. There's no doubt. I'm sure it has its side effects just like a statin would, but, you know, I don't think you're going to get the muscle breakdown that you do with statins. Again, I'm not totally against statins in certain people, you know, a lot of it depends on, you know, look, the size of the particle, your lipid panel, you know, again, a total cholesterol, HDL and LDL doesn't do it. You need to look at the size of the particles, whether or not your LDL is oxidized, what your myeloperoxidase looks like, what your LP little a looks like, and probably most importantly, what your ApoB level is. Needs to be under 90. You know, gosh, I don't know which one I'd take if I had to choose between those two. If I had risk factors, like an elevated calcium scoring, diabetes, hypertension, strong family history, smoking. If you're smoking, forget it anyway. Just give it up. So you might try it. You know, you may have to go through a process of, they may require you to try a statin first. I don't know. Depends on the insurance companies. But I don't really have a lot of experience using Repatha because I don't find that I really need it that much. I'll tell you one, there's a lot of little quirks that you can do to bring your cholesterol down with supplements. Garlic's pretty good. Hawthorn is really good. One I really like is tocotrienols. You know, I think Steve talked about his one day, how much it had brought down, and I've seen that before as well. That's kind of it's vitamin E, but it's a special form of vitamin E that you're not going to get through just taking vitamin E. So you can try some of that stuff. I don't know whether you have familial type 2 hypercholesterolemia, which is inherited, and it's, you know, it's hard to do by diet alone. So I'd go get a Berkeley lipid panel or a Cleveland Heart panel, Boston Heart, and look at that. Look at your CT calcium, and maybe try some of the alternatives before you get on something that heavy-handed.
Chuck, thank you so much for that question. We need to talk more about stuff like this around the statins and the cholesterol. It's a really important we get some education out there on it. Thelma is asking, hi, can I do intermittent fasting without weight loss? I'm at my ideal weight right now, and that's all I want. I love this question.
Great question. Nobody's ever asked me that, but surely you can. I mean, I do it. I do it. I don't want to lose weight. You know, I want to stay where I am. I want to even gain a little bit of muscle weight probably. I'm one of those hard gainers though, but yeah, you certainly can, you know, just make sure, you know, you should be one that does the in-body analysis to see what's your body fat percentage is, your basic metabolic rate, your water retention, your segmental muscles and all that. But no, certainly it's great for you. You know, you're not going to, you know, you just eat right on in the 6 or 8 hours that you do eat, or 12 hours that you eat. You can do a 12 on, 12 off.
Yep.
You don't have to do a very strict, you know, fasting protocol. So yeah, I think you'll feel better. You're more likely to keep the weight off too if you've lost weight and you're now at your ideal weight. So,
all good right, question. Thelma. Yeah, especially if you feel great, then yeah, a lot of people feel great while intermittent fasting. Thank you, Thelma, for putting that in there. It's a great question. Ray on YouTube, my wife had COVID about 18 months ago, and it left her with chronic bronchitis. She has had to take both antibiotics and steroids on two occasions. Would you recommend her taking NAC, and how much?
Yeah, I would. You know, I like NAC probably anywhere from 600 to 1200 milligrams a day. You know what I would use on her? Methylene blue. Methylene blue would be great for her. Try methylene blue. It's over the counter. Put 8 drops in a glass of water every day and drink it. It really improves oxygenation. That'd probably be a really good thing. I don't know if she has some exertional shortness of breath. I don't know if she suffers from long COVID, but certainly there is a regimen that will help her. You know, I have seen some people have COVID and it kicks off a little intrinsic lung disease, restrictive lung disease. So she probably ought to get some pulmonary function tests. But look up methylene blue and try it. It's not going to hurt her. Has a lot of other benefits too, cognitively and everything. But chronic, I don't know whether she's a smoker, history of asthma. Sometimes, of course, we use Pulmicort, which is an inhaled steroid. You have to use that chronically for people with asthma. So she needs testing and treatment. Try methylene blue.
Ray.
Keep taking NAC. I'd probably take an average of probably, unless I was a heavy drinker, I'd probably just take 600 milligrams of it.
All right, Ray, I hope that helps. Thank you for putting that question in there. Ruth on Facebook, diagnosed with Hashimoto's. Any advice? I know you have thoughts on this.
A lot of advice. You know, it's the most common cause of hypothyroidism is Hashimoto's. It's very common. It's familial. So it runs in families. You know, something kind of unleashed that virus and, you know, kind of knocked most of your thyroid function out. I'll tell you a couple things. One is get on a gluten-free diet, you know, supplement with zinc, 50 milligrams, maybe a little higher, 75 if you can tolerate it, cause the nausea. Take it with food. Selenium 200. Check your antibodies levels and watch them. I'm sure you're probably taking a thyroid supplement. I would get a baseline ultrasound of your thyroid to look and see what it looks like. And you know, work your way into that. Another thing I use a lot that's kind of outside the box, but very helpful for Hashimoto's especially, is low dose naltrexone. It works really well. So there's a lot of things to consider with Hashimoto's. Don't freak out. It's the most common cause of hypothyroidism for sure. You should really consult with Margo, our PA in our Fountain City office. She has it. She's an expert at it. Unbelievable knowledge on Hashimoto's. You know, she'll do a telemedicine consult with you, spend a lot of time with you and help you. And she has books for you to read, all that kind of stuff.
She's really amazing with any autoimmune diseases, especially Hashimoto's. So shout out to Margo in the Fountain City location. Ruth, I hope that helps. We're going to keep moving here. Thelma's asking about fatty liver disease. How can you reverse fatty liver disease? What's your thoughts on this?
Losing weight usually is the first thing you think about it. Mm-hmm. Avoiding alcohol. But I'll tell you what's been amazing is the use of Ozempic and Mounjaro. Mm-hmm. Reverse fatty liver disease, as well as protect your heart. I mean, those two medicines will go down in history as the most beneficial medicines of this century until the next big thing comes up. But think about one of those two medicines. They can really do it. And, you know, if it's mild, of course, lose weight, take milk thistle, glutathione, you know, knack, those type of things.
All right. I hope that helps, Thelma. We're going to go to Golf House on YouTube. I know omega-3s has been talked to death. I would like to know how much to take daily. What's your thoughts on omega-3s?
Yeah, they're very helpful. If you ever see any study that says they're not effective, they weren't using enough. So the key is using enough. That's why we check the omega-3 and 6 levels when we do a Cleveland. It's on there. We look at all of it, your DHA, your EPA, all that stuff, and measure it. We look at that ratio of 6 to 3. But usually you're not gonna affect it unless you get at least, you know, 2 grams of it. And if you have high triglycerides, you're probably gonna need more than that. But it's just wonderful for you. You know, right behind vitamin D with K, omega-3s are my favorite. Just make sure you get a good quality omega-3. If it's rancid, it's not good for you. And there's a huge difference in omega-3s. I prefer the krill. Again, we're ordering. We may have them in already. The ones I like from Zymogen. I'm white labeling my own omegas now. And they're good. I like the ones from Ortho Molecular as well. So those are my favorites.
Hope that helps, Golf House. Let's get to Kathy's question on Facebook. Isoniazid meds for TB?
Isoniazid. Tuberculosis. Yeah, isoniazid. It's not really an antibiotic. It's more of an anti-parasitic type drug. But yeah, I mean, it's a heavy hitter. But if you have TB, you need a heavy hitter. You need somebody that's a pulmonary doctor to treat this. So make sure you get a specialist to treat this.
All right, Kathy, I'm sorry for mispronouncing that. Isoniazid?
Isoniazid.
Kathy, thank you for putting that in there. Okay, let's get to Gator Hater for Life on YouTube. I've been curious, is PM available to be like my family physician? I've only been to the doctor, including my Cleveland test at PM 6 times in my life. So it seems that Gator Hater's come in for the Cleveland. Just wondering if they had different issues. You know, it's funny because you and I were talking about this weekend, actually. Sometimes I think here's Gator Hater. Or is PM just for hormone therapy and weight loss?
No, it's for everything. We can certainly take care of about anything you're probably going to come up with. If something's outside the box, we're going to tell you this is the specialist you need to see. So, yeah, you know, we don't advertise that I'm a family doctor, board certified for 38 years, but I certainly love it, and I like treating a bunch of different stuff. We just have a niche of weight loss, nutrition, metabolic syndrome, and hormones. But sure, we love to treat anything. That's why we do a lot of little urgent care stuff. Be glad to help out.
Great question there, Gator Hair. Thank you for letting us clarify that for everybody. Okay, let's keep moving here. I know I'm bouncing around between YouTube and Facebook. I'm going to try to find where I'm at. Let's see here. You know, I'm going to put this up from Tat to Trav on YouTube. We haven't gotten a question like this before. Does semen retention really help getting swole? Arnold and Tyson and others started practicing this. I know it's been a popular topic around YouTube with some of the other health and wellness podcasts. Might be kind of out of your wheelhouse. What's your thoughts on this?
I don't think there's any credence to it, but I really don't. I don't see why. Just really don't.
No, it's a great question, Tat to Trav. Thank you for putting that in there. It's interesting just to get a family doc's perspective on it. All right, we're going to keep moving. Get the Jack here. Seems we have a couple different Jacks on YouTube. Thank you guys for hanging out. I have a coworker who has had COVID several times and has it again. What is your take on why some don't gain immunity? Good question.
Well, I could tell you the quick answer to that is because they got that jab too many times, probably. If they did, that's what I've seen. But, it seems like you're more likely to get it over and over again if you're trying to do that over and over again. It doesn't work. And it seems to make you more susceptible to the next round coming around. Just like we talked about before, take care of your own natural immunity. Certainly make sure you have good doses of zinc, C, and D on a daily basis. People are different. Their immune systems are different. There's probably over 100 genes that get involved in this thing here, even with COVID. That COVID gains access to this thing called the ACE2 inhibitor in your cells. And for some people, there's about 15% of the population are not going to get it because they're resistant to it because their ACE2 blocker receptor works better, I guess. But there's genetic factors to this. But certainly somebody that's unhealthy, not getting enough sleep, is deficient on vitamins, they're going to be more likely to get it. They just are. I like Dr. Osborne's explanation when he talks about taking vitamins in his book, and he goes, err on the side of, precaution. Take more vitamins than you think you need. They're not going to hurt you. Nobody dies of a vitamin overdose. So immunity, your immune system. A lot of people get colds every time they get around kids, I guess chronic exposure helps your immune system in a lot of ways. It's certainly the best type of immunity is natural immunity. So think about some of that stuff.
Great question there, Jack. Thank you for putting that in there. I'm going to get to Andy Margaret. Have long COVID and just can't seem to shake sinus issues. Stuffy nose, fullness of head, headache, ear stuffiness, aches, and slight dizziness. I've tried everything, Flonase, rinse, and antibiotic rinse. I have seen 2 ENT and doctor said CT in-office shows inflammation. What would you suggest for this?
Yeah. If you have inflammation, a lot of times infection follows inflammation. Have you tried an oral antibiotic for a while? Sometimes it takes a month to get over a rip-roaring sinus infection. So I'm not against this as long as you take a good probiotic like Digest Shield or some of the others. That's my favorite. But the other thing, hopefully you're doing Navage nasal rinses. You definitely should be trying low-dose naltrexone and probably methylene blue. I like the nasal steroids like Flonase. I don't know if it's mixed in with some of the if you have a lot of allergies as well, possible. I've seen some of this. It'd be interesting to see if you still have taste or smell. I like zinc for that. I like the nasal saline rinses. Sound like you probably already tried that. But you may need a prolonged round of antibiotics. You may need oral steroids for a little bit. If you're suffering like that, something needs to be done. You know, not just blowing it off. And sometimes you got to think outside the box, like taking even an antiviral, like ivermectin. But there certainly should be some things that you can try. So that would really be my choice if you get on LDN or maybe methylene blue.
Andy, Margaret, I hope that helps. I hope you start to feel better soon. I'm going to put this up from Gator Hater just because, honestly, what do you think? Should we do a podcast on creatine?
Probably.
I think so.
Good idea. Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Gator Hater.
Good idea.
I'm going to write that down.
Because it's controversial, you know. Some people think, well, it's going to mess my kidneys up. It's really not. We'll put that down. Maybe we'll try to do that.
Put that down the list. Okay, it seems Andy Margaret has had 1 week of Z-Pak, and it seems to help, but comes back afterwards.
I'd really think about taking a month of doxycycline, 100 milligrams a day for a month. And doxy is one of those that you're not going to get immune to. We use it for years in some patients. I don't like to use antibiotics because of the gut, but sometimes you have to. Remember to take probiotics and, you know, that dose is probably not going to wreck your gut, but certainly stay away from inflammatory foods. Look at your diet. Somebody has a chronic problem, I always look at, are they eating inflammatory foods? This could certainly prolong it. And general state of health.
Andy, Margaret, thank you for putting that in there. Golly, they're just such good.
Silver nitrate. You can do silver nitrate. You know, colloidal silver, I mean, or you could do, you know, the betadine nasal sprays, that type of thing. There's all kinds of stuff you could really think about doing.
Thank you for putting that in there. Great question there. I see, Evangelon, Tatutrav, y'all are having such a great back and forth. Thank you guys for putting all that great information in there. And we're going to keep going here. I think we're almost, Jack said it, it's almost time for the pups. I don't think I've missed a question.
I think it is. I think it's almost time for the pups. It's after 8 o'clock. I haven't got my bike ride. It's getting late. I'm either going to go ride my bike or practice Blackbird.
I say go ride a bike. I'm just making sure I got to everybody. If I didn't get your question. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.